2 years ago, the Civil Partnership and Certain Rights and Obligations of Cohabitation Act 2010 was passed by overwhelming majorities in both Doyle and Shannon. But it has its critics on both sides of the debate. On one side, there are those who don't believe in civil partnership at all. And on the other side, there are those who say that the Act didn't go far enough, that anything short of marriage for same-sex couples is discriminatory. Last week, the Taoiseach Eamon Gilmore said that he was in favour of gay marriage, prompting calls for the Taoiseach to state his position. He has said in the past he wasn't in favour of it, but he refused to be drawn on it last week, other than stating it would be examined by the Constitutional Convention.
I speak on behalf of the government. The government has put in place a process here by which this is a matter that will be considered by the Constitutional Convention. And that process will start next week when we set up the Constitutional Convention. The position is that I speak as Taoiseach, and in respect of the government have set in place a process here which will be seen through on a whole range of issues, including the question of gay marriage, which will be considered properly and fully and comprehensively by the Constitutional Convention when it becomes effective.
I'm joined by Labour Senator Ivana Bacik and by David Quinn of the Iona Institute and columnist with the Irish Independent. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Now, David, in your piece in the Independent last week, you claimed there was something hypocritical in those who supported the idea of gay marriage.
Well, to this extent, I mean, the people who support gay marriage, you know, if, I suppose, like, the way you can test whether a person is really concerned about the health of the institution of marriage is to find out whether they have a track record in, you know, calling attention to trends which are sort of inimical to the health of marriage. And so one would be, you know, rising divorce and separation. If you take separation back in 1986, according to census data, there was 40,000 separated adults in the country. There's now 250,000. The number of kids who have been raised outside marriage, that is not by their two married parents, is now 28%, higher than the EU average. It's almost 500,000 children, and heavily concentrated in the most disadvantaged areas, by the way. And I could, you know, rattle off a few more examples of how, you know, marriage is, you know, in less rude good health than people think it is. And so people who are genuinely concerned about marriage and its health and its, and, you know, how strong it is as an institution, raise these sort of issues. The people who are backing same-sex marriage have never raised any of these things. In fact, they've often been the people who have set about weakening the institution of marriage in the name of personal freedom and equality and so on. And, you know, I have never made a suggestion as to how the institution might be strengthened, have never worried, as I say, about rising divorce and separation and suggested how this may be reduced, have never worried about the number of kids who are born outside marriage, often, you know, with no father active in their lives. And so, you know, then suddenly they start turning their attention to marriage again simply in order to redefine it. And so,
could it simply be selfishness, though, that they don't actually care about the state of other people's marriages, they just want it for themselves as gay people?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't put it down to selfishness in the part of,
you know, this
of
is a
people.
Right we want yeah. for ourselves. The fact that other people haven't made a fist of their marriages or haven't bothered to get married, that's their business, but our business is we want to be married.
I wouldn't actually put it down to selfishness on the part of gay people at a gay lobby. It's more, and I wouldn't even put it down to selfishness particularly on the part of their allies. But obviously, this can't be gotten through unless they have plenty of allies, because gay people in themselves make up about 2% of the population, according to a big ESRI study from a few years back. And so what I was simply saying in that column is the people who are allied to the gay lobby on this, and there are many, have no track record whatsoever in terms of wanting to strengthen the institution of marriage.
Senator Ivana Bacik.
Well, where do I begin? I must say, I think what David has just said is an extraordinary way of casting aspersions on people's motivation in campaigning for what, as the Taoiseach recently said, is the civil rights issue of our generation. I must say, I think it's outrageous to suggest that people who are campaigning for or calling for gay marriage to be legalised, that are they are in some way anti the institution of marriage.
Well,
I just think,
excuse me,
David, I didn't interrupt you, although I must say I was very tempted to. I think it's an extraordinary claim to make. First of all, I think it's bizarre to suggest that people who wish to see marriage rights extended to same-sex couples are in some way anti-marriage, when patently what they want to see is the institution of marriage strengthened by allowing it to be extended to other couples.
Okay, you said something very interesting there. You said the marriage rights to be extended.
Yes.
A lot of people, their objection might be simply to calling it marriage, that you can have all the rights, but as long as you don't call it marriage, that's okay. You can call it civil partnership plus, civil partnership, you know, with knobs on, but don't call it marriage. But we're prepared to vote for a comprehensive civil partnership. But please don't ask us to call it marriage.
Well, I think anything other than the same institution for same-sex and opposite-sex couples would not be equality.
Does the name make any difference?
Pat, to that extent, the name does make a difference, yes, because I think what people want to see, what I want to see, what the Labour Party wants to see, is equality for same-sex and opposite-sex couples. And if it's not marriage, it's not equality. Now, having said that, I was one of the people who was strongly in favour of the Civil Partnership Act and, you know, spoke in favour of it as the bill progressed through the House, but made clear at the same time that I saw it as a stepping stone to full equality. It was hugely important in my mind that gay couples who wished to see their relationship recognised in law were able to do so, and that's what civil partnership has done for us. And I must say, among most people in Ireland now, you know, if you're invited to a civil partnership ceremony, all intents and purposes, you call it a wedding.
About the word, though, because I think it's interesting. People would think that marriage is defined by having a husband and a wife. That's marriage. They would think that, I think, in commonsensical terms, not legal terms. If you end up with two husbands and two wives, people would say, well, it's something, but it's not marriage as language has described marriage in the past.
Well, I think language evolves and our understanding of institutions evolves. And certainly, I mean, David mentioned the divorce campaign. And yes, I was involved in the divorce campaign, not in 86, I must say, but I was a little too young, but in 1995 when divorce was passed. I saw that again as a way of recognising the sadness and the reality of marriage breakdown in Irish society, but giving people an important way of recognising in law if their marriage had broken down irrevocably that they couldn't remarry. And that to many people was really the reason they voted for divorce.
And already extends
to... So our understanding changed there.
Under, and you're the legal brain here, under the Cohabitation Act we referred to, the breaking up of a cohabiting couple is also catered for in that act.
That's quite right, Pat. And I mean,
that's often
overlooked.
So it takes account of the fact...
Yeah. If you're together for a few years.
It's often overlooked that the 2010 Act not only legalised civil partnerships between same-sex couples, but also
provides for their disentanglement legally. David.
Redress for opposite-sex and same-sex cohabiting couples also. But I would say the civil partnership, just to finish that point, it isn't the same as marriage. In particular, the rights and responsibilities of a same-sex couple in a civil partnership towards children are not the same as for a married couple. And children's rights are not adequately
Maybe
protected.
David will make this argument. I don't have to pose the question, but I'll pose it anyway. Suppose you got everything except they decided, well, we won't call it marriage. We'll call it, as I say, civil partnership comprehensive. Would that be enough? Or what is it about the word?
I think what people want to see, Pat, is equality. And I think at this stage, the debate has moved on. I mean, public opinion is in favour of same-sex marriage being recognised in law. And I think that's now the position of the majority of people. I think it's time that as legislators, as policymakers, we moved on to recognise that.
David, what about that? In your sister newspaper, the Sunday Independent yesterday, they had one of these telephone surveys which suggested that over 70% of people were in favour of gay marriage. What did you make of that?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, other polls that come up with similar results. But in the States, at least in the US, they've had 31 referenda about this issue, including in liberal states like California. And it's lost 31 times out of 31. In Slovenia, a couple of months back, there was also a referendum on the issue. And the pro-gay marriage position was 20 points ahead with days to go and lost by 10 points. And I think one of the reasons that it loses every time it's put to a popular vote, and this is every single time without exception it is lost when put to the popular vote, is because when people begin to hear the argument, you'd suddenly discover the support for it is actually very soft. And the argument really is like this. The principle of equal treatment allows you to treat different situations in different ways. And in fact, you must treat different situations in different ways. And therefore, you ask yourself the question, is there something different, uniquely different about the relationship of a man and a woman that justifies different treatment? And of course there is. And this, we must always keep in mind, when we're having any debate about the family, any debate about marriage, it can be primarily about adults. Any debate about the family, any debate about marriage has to primarily have the welfare of children in mind. And while it is of course the case that gay couples sometimes have children, nonetheless it is the case that if you look at the research, kids generally do best when raised by their own married, loving mother and father. There is something unique about being able to provide a child with a mother and a father. And it makes sense
But we know there are many orphaned children or orphaned of one parent, many children in situations where they're raised by their grandmother. They do very well, thank you very much.
Yes, of course. But I mean, you know, if we say that it makes no difference being raised by your own mother and father. It's kind of an extraordinary statement to make, that there's no advantage to being raised by the two people who have brought you into the world, provided that they're loving and competent parents. Obviously, it's much better to be raised by a loving lesbian couple than to be left in an orphanage. I support gay adoption under particular circumstances, but all I'm saying is, as a society, do we have an interest or not in trying to ensure that as many kids as possible are raised by the two people who have brought the child into the world, that is to say, by the mother and the father in the vast majority of circumstances? And society's answer to this question has always been yes, and the way we encourage mothers and fathers to raise their kids together is through the institution of marriage. That's why it has its present shape.
Well, look, you know, all the research on childcare, on looking at how children are best brought up, shows it's the quality of the parenting that counts, not the relationship. David, I didn't interrupt you. It's not about the relationship between the parents, it's not about the sexuality of the parents, and many children are brought up in very different family forms to the nuclear family that we think of as the standard form. If you look at Irish history, you'll find that the extended family played an enormous role in bringing up children in the very recent past. So really, to sort of pinpoint one particular institution as the be-all and end-all, I think is often misleading.
But hang on a second, just to address again common sense. If you've got a husband and a wife who by and large get on with each other, who present a loving environment for their children, biological father, biological mother, are you saying there's no hierarchy at all in what would be the ideal situation? Would that not be the absolute ideal, that the two people who provide the genetic material, and we know how important that is these days, the genetic material for their children, that they would be, if you like, number one in the top 10. I'm not saying that there aren't a whole hierarchy of people who might raise children really, really well.
I think, Pat, it's dangerous to start talking about hierarchies and genetic parents. I mean, think of the vast numbers of people who have babies through other means, through IVF, who adopt children. To suggest that in some way there's a hierarchy and they're not up at the top, I think that's actually quite disparaging of people, if you don't mind me saying. If I could just finish.
I'm not saying that people turn out badly in any of the other situations. I'm suggesting that as there can be a hierarchy in universities where you lecture or in schools, there can be a hierarchy in terms of the best outcomes. A hierarchy, which is not to say that other outcomes aren't splendid, but that there might be a hierarchy.
Again,
I'm only suggesting it to you.
Well, I think, again, what we need to look at is the quality of the parenting, supporting parents in supporting parents in raising their children, and supporting couples in loving relationships, be they same-sex or opposite-sex couples. And I think anyone who knows a couple who are in a loving relationship, be they same-sex or opposite-sex, and who are bringing up children in a loving environment, that's the key thing. Yes, absolutely.
David, isn't there a point that the people who desperately want to get married and in their situations through in vitro fertilisation or other assisted pregnancy methods or adoption, that people who desperately want to be married are very likely to be terrific parents?
Well, they might well be, but you see, I mean, like as you were pointing out, there is in fact a hierarchy, and the research shows this, that, you know, what it shows again and again and again is that in general kids tend to do best when raised by their own two biological parents in a low conflict marriage. And the implication of Ivana's argument is there's no special advantage of being raised by your own two parents. It'd be an extraordinary thing if in fact there was no particular advantage of being raised by the mother and the father who bring you into the world. You seem to be saying there's no intrinsic value in being raised by your own two parents. And Ivana, you know, you are all in favour of gender quotas when it comes to politics. You insist there must be X percent of women in politics. So you see the importance of sexual complementarity when it comes to politics, but you don't see it when it comes to parenting. And that's extraordinary. You don't need a man and a woman to bring a political party into existence. You need a man and a woman to bring a child into existence. And when it comes to politics, you see the importance of having the two sexes. And when it comes to parents, you don't, even though a child can't exist without a mother and a father.
Ivana.
Okay, David. Well, without getting worked up about it, all I'm saying is that heterosexual married parents have no exclusive prerogative in terms of quality of child rearing. Quality of child rearing is about the quality of the parenting. It's about the loving relationship between the carer and the child, the parent and the child, be it biological parent, adoptive parent, step parent. I mean, you know, we have many different family
Why
forms.
Why is sexual complementarity important for politics?
I'm not going
and not
to start
for children.
Prioritizing, nor am I going to start the debate
on
cultures and politics, which is an utterly separate debate.
Not at all.
No, hang
you
on a second.
It's Ivana,
we've often heard the arguments, and he's right, that people are saying that women do bring a different dimension to to the Doyle Chamber.
Or the boardroom.
And if there was more of them, it would be better, you say. In the boardroom, the same kind of thing. The women tend to have a different approach. And he's just saying, maybe it sounds logical that if you have to have lots of men and women in politics or in the boardroom, you know, the necessity of having the male and the female figure in the child rearing
absolutely. I mean, I think ideally every child should have access to uncles, aunts, different role models of male and female carers. David,
their own actual
David,
father.
Ideally, every child would have access to that. Ideally, every child would have two parents who love them and who are bringing them up in an exclusive relation, in a relationship that is about loving them and about quality of parenting. But it's not to say that heterosexual married parents have some sort of exclusive prerogative.
But is there an advantage to be
raised by your
own two parents?
David, could I just say this, David? You're suggesting that I'm in some way anti-marriage. You mightn't be aware that I'm actually bringing a bill through, and it's gone through the Shannon indeed, and it's due to go into the Dáil, to extend the right to celebrate legal marriage to humanist celebrants. And I think that's a hugely important pro-marriage initiative.
Some of the comments.
But it does, because it enables more people to get married in a way they want.
Vanna, when I hear you worrying about rising divorce and separation, the number of kids not being raised by their father,
I'm worried about marriage breakdown.
Then I will take you.
David, I'm worried about marriage breakdown.
Well, I haven't
to suggest
heard.
That conflates with divorce and separation.
Here's some comments coming in from Sheila. Gay marriage. The people should understand some of the drawbacks. A, individualisation in the tax code, and B, joint income taken into account in assessing entitlements to certain social welfare benefits. From Jerry Dempsey, being an ex-Catholic, I have no desire to marry in that institution. My issue is with the state. What the state recognises in a Catholic marriage, or Anglican, etc., I want the state to recognise in mine. I want a secular same-sex marriage. I don't want to play semantics with anyone. I want equality, says Jerry. From Malcolm, the dogs in the street know there is little or no prospect of passing a constitutional referendum on gay marriage, so really it is a dead duck issue. With the social engineering experiment of legalising same-sex marriage, it is hypocritical of the government to preach about children's rights. Children are entitled to an environment to know both parents. Same-sex marriage denies them that right. Why discriminate against Muslims and legalise polygamy? That's from another caller. Gay marriage is not a right. Society does not need it. What business does the state have being involved in private lives of its citizens? The state should do civil unions for whoever for legal rights. Remember, the census showed 84% of the population identified itself as Catholic. For a Catholic, one is not married by the state, they're married by God. For many, going to the registry office and signing a piece of paper isn't viewed as a proper marriage anyway. Marriage is a union under God. That's from Robert. A number of a selection, if you like, of points of view there. Ivana, as again the legal expert, this has to involve a change in the constitution, doesn't it?
Well, Pat, I'm junior counsel in a case that's currently before the courts, the Zappone-Gilligan case. I can't comment on that case. In that case, as I'm involved in it, but as listeners may be aware, it's a case that asserts that same-sex marriage rights are in the Constitution, are recognised in the Constitution. So it's about constitutional interpretation. You know, I think that the Programme for Government has clearly stated that the issue of gay marriage, of same-sex marriage, should be considered by the Constitutional Convention. That position has been restated by the Taoiseach, as we heard. The Taoiseach has made clear the Labour Party's position, which is a long-standing commitment we have had to recognition of gay marriage. We've had that position as a policy for some years now. So the Taoiseach was merely restating that. And indeed, the Taoiseach's appointment of Catherine Zappone as a really excellent senator last year, I think, you know, again, bears testimony to the Labour Party commitment to gay marriage and to that.
Okay, so we have to await the outcome of that case, which may go beyond these shores, I presume, ultimately, if it fails on this.
Again, we'll have to see. But I mean, yeah. I would
so,
say...
Look, we won't parse that one.
We won't parse that. But Pat, if I could just say one thing in response to some of the listeners' queries about, you know, the state versus church. Clearly, the debate we're having is all about state recognition of same-sex marriage. And the church rules on marriage, be it Catholic Church or any other religion, that's their own business. And nobody seeks to change, or you know, certainly I wouldn't, and no state legislation would seek to interfere with that.
Caesar or Enda... what is Caesar's or Enda's, and let the church legislate for its own labelling,
right. The church rules should not dictate state law on marriage.
Well, if the Catholic Church didn't exist, if Christianity didn't exist, we'd still be having this argument. I mean, in China, officially an atheistic country, they have the same definition of marriage that we have here. Okay, the European Court of Human Rights recently found there is no right in the convention to same-sex marriage, and this does not constitute discrimination. Because, again, it is completely legitimate to treat different situations in different ways. And that is why the European Court of Human Rights found that there is no right to same-sex marriage in the convention. I mean, this thing has been presented as a grand human right.
So hang on a second. Is it actually down to what's in a name, as I suggested at the very beginning?
Well, it's not.
Is that what it is all about?
Well, it's also what
you call it.
It's also what the name signals. I mean, do we want to keep marriage as a primarily child-centred institution, aimed mainly, not only obviously, but mainly at uniting children to their mothers and their fathers? Do we think sexual complementarity matters? Do we think motherhood and fatherhood matters? Do we think there's an advantage to a child in being raised by the two people who bring the child into the world? Do we think the natural ties matter? And by the way, in Denmark, they've recently passed a law to force churches to host same-sex marriages. So this doesn't stop here.
But there's no question of that here, David. As you well know, there is no question here. There's no link between state and church. And that's a completely separate issue.
But the reason this is such a radical claim is because it denies sexual complementarity and its importance. It denies the intrinsic value of motherhood and fatherhood. And it also denies the importance of the natural tie.
Absolutely not. And to deny marriage rights to same-sex couples, many of whom have children already, is to deny the rights of those children within the same-sex family to the same rights and entitlements
those
as the children of heterosexual families. And could I say,
Pat, could I say, Pat, in respect of some
of David's points, that this is an evolving issue, that this is an issue where we're seeing law change at a dramatic speed around the world. We're seeing Canada, we're seeing South Africa, we're seeing Israel changing law to allow same-sex marriage, many US states doing so, referendum due in Washington State in the autumn that I think will be passed in favour of same-sex marriage. So we're seeing an area where people's opinions and views are evolving, and there's clearly a growing majority in favour of extending equal rights to same-sex couples.
I hope we return to seeing it as a child-centred institution primarily. Well,
and it is about the
children of gay
couples.
Our debate this morning is suggesting a much more lively and entertaining debate than some of the referendum debates we have had in the past, should it come to that. Senator Ivana Bacik and David Quinn of the Ione Institute and the Irish Independent, thank you very much for joining us.